And I am glad that you are here and with us this morning. I want to take the opportunity quick to talk about a couple of things before we carry on into part three, week three of this new series, Under the Sun, that I love through the book of Ecclesiastes. So, hey, here's two things real quick. This series is a blast and slash but... Next week, we are going to be continuing on with this right up there on that lawn under the gazebo with our third picnic church of the year. That's right, for Memorial Day, 4th of July weekend, and Labor Day weekend, we kind of pause what we're doing in this room, in this building, and we carry our service upstairs to have a picnic church up there. So here's what I need you to do. I need you to get your phone out. I need you to scan that code on the chair in front of you, and I need you to sign up for next week, because what we are doing is this. We are providing the fried chicken next week. Yes, there will be fried chicken from Vons in abundance going on up there. Our students will be leading us in worship, and we will be having an abbreviated message continuing on this series, but we're going to be serving some fried chicken right afterwards, okay? And what we need you to do is bring some sides. So if you go on to that website real quick, you'll be able to fill out, hey, I'm coming, and I will be bringing da-da-da-da-da, whatever, chips, macaroni salad. I don't know what you're going to bring, but there's that. Hey, second thing I want to say to you this morning is this, okay? And this is my fault that I have not caught us up to speed, because last year, when we were in our budgeting process for Church 180, and we were projecting out what was going to happen this coming year, our Church 180 management team slash board slash elders, who are all external as we work on having an internal board of people within Church 180, they looked at our budget for the year and they said, this looks great, but here's what we're going to need you to do, Tony. We're going to need you to cut, okay, $18,000 out of this budget. Like, cut it out. You figure that out, go back to your team, you figure it out, and cut it out, because you are starting to grow up as a church. That's right, we planted right before COVID, 7 weeks before COVID happened. And you're starting to grow up as a church, and what grown-up churches do is they support other works in other new churches and other new church starts. And so last year, October, we cut $18,000 out of our budget, which was rather difficult and tedious, and we cut it, and we set it aside so that we could start to support new work that God is doing around the world and in our country, okay? And so right now, our finance team, a few of us, we are getting together with more church plants that we believe in, that we're trying to figure out how we can get back, to back up and get behind. Everything like that. But we actually, 3 months ago, I think it was 3 months ago, I can be corrected if I'm wrong, we actually jumped on board and we started supporting a church plant, okay? And so there's a family. Can we get this next slide up of this family? So Matt Fogel, off here on the left, okay, is a good friend of mine. Him and I went to school together, we went to college together, and they planted around the same time as us in Mesa, Arizona. So a suburb of Phoenix is where they planted for a bunch of different reasons, which I could talk about. Matt will probably talk here someday and everything. And through a bunch of different reasons, COVID was not very good to their church. So they actually relocated afterwards in 2022, and they are getting going again in a very solid way, where they have about 100 people gathering Sunday basis right there in Mesa, Arizona, and they're taking off as a church plant. And as Church 180 this year, we are behind slides real quick. If you go to the next one we have here, this was back in 2019 as they were getting going, had been a part of the faith, but had kind of fallen away for a while. But through this new church plant, okay, he started to reinvigorate his faith and started to come alive and grow with Rhythm Community, and to the point where this day, actually, were able to designate him as one of their internal board members and one of their internal leaders that they have It's incredible. And the thing I want to share with you is this, is that, man, this is why we believe in church planting so much, is because 95% of people who come to faith do so in a church that's 5 years old or less, do so in a young church. And this is why we continuous plant and be a part of planting church plants. Because as we've talked about at Church 180 before, like if every single established old and doing incredible things, not even 9% of our church would go, our city would go to church. It's the dynamic, continual replanting of churches to make that a reality, make that happen. So this guy's story was part of that, coming back and getting energized and reinvigorated as a part of Church 180. You played a part in that. You did. You played a part in that, right? You can clap for yourself. That's right. You played a part in that. If you go to this next slide, because group began this past week in this building. And I was actually showed up because I brought my 11-year-old right over here this night of youth. And there was 29 students, y'all. We had 29 students from Church 180, middle school and high school, gathered for the first night of youth group in this room back here. That's incredible, right? Great. And so this is their first youth group right here as a church as well, in a living room, in a house, with about 15 students gathered there from Rhythm Community there in Maytona. The thing I want to point out and the thing I want to continually say before we get going, the Sun message today is this, is whenever you support Church 180, you are supporting church planting works around our country and around our world. That's what we want to be a part of. When we go to the Dominican Republic and Go Ministries, they are supporting more church plant work there because we believe that is the way that we are going to influence and affect and change the spiritual landscape, not only of our country, but of our world through church planting. So we believe in that. And I'm going to be updating you over the next few months over the works that we are supporting and the work we are engaged in at Church 180 and what we are supporting through church planting in that. That said, I'm going to pray for us, and we're going to get into this Under the Sun series. Jesus, I pray, Lord, are you through your Spirit speak directly to our hearts profoundly what we need to hear in this. And so it's in your name we pray. I'm going to go experience everything. I'm going to try everything out. I'm going to learn everything. And Ecclesiastes is kind of a journal entry back to what he discovered and to what he found about that. And what we've said week after week after week is we've said that you and I oftentimes are on a quest for meaning. We're on a quest for happiness. We're on a quest, and we are not able to chase down happiness and meaning to the extent that Solomon was able to. Like, he had all the money, he had all the wealth, he had all the power, he had everything at his disposal to do everything and to try everything and to basically do that. And so we get to this passage today. We're going to be actually looking at a little bit of last week, and then we're going to introduce chapter 3, because I believe, I wrote it this way in my notes, but I believe Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 17 through 3:22 is one continuous rambling back and forth of Solomon in this journal entry.
And he talks a lot about life. He talks about the ups and downs of life. He talks about work in it. And he talks a lot about beauty and meaning on top of hopelessness and despair. So he contrasts like so much of what he's been able to see and experience through life, like this beauty and meaning that he finds in life, but on top of that, this hopelessness and despair that he sees, right? And you guys get that, right? You live in San Diego. There's so much beauty here. There's so much to revel in. There's so much to like go out and enjoy a sunset out on the beach. But then it doesn't take very long that you drive into certain places and you see certain experiences or whatever, and you realize that there is also so much hopelessness and so much despair right within our midst. And Solomon kind of starts to really write on that. And I feel like I need to set up the passage that we're going to look at today with just a little bit of a worldview. My wife and I, we had the opportunity to attend a baby shower yesterday, okay? And it's some of our neighbors that live right next to us, and we attended pretty much an all-Mexican, everybody was speaking Spanish, baby shower yesterday afternoon. It was incredible. It was beautiful. We loved it. And we sat at a table with some of our other neighbors, the only ones, you know, we were the only ones that weren't part of the family there. And our other neighbors are Iranian, okay? And we've gotten to know them over the past few weeks and months, I guess years. They moved in 2019. We didn't really know them until 2021, okay? COVID, right? And so I knew that he was the Iranian guy. I knew he was a church guy. I knew he went to the Seventh-day Adventist church. But as we were talking over lunch and over tacos yesterday, I started to ask him questions, and I started to learn a little bit more about his worldview and the fact that he maybe just went to church because he thought it was a good thing and he thought religion was a good thing, but his worldview was so different than that of a Christian and those who follow Jesus. And I say all that because within this passage, within everything Solomon's going to talk about, what we have to understand is that it all is undergirded with a Genesis 1, Genesis 2, and Genesis 3 worldview, okay? And I'm not trying to get into semantics. I'm not trying to say God created the world in like one day and all these different things and like or 7 days, 6 days, whatever. I'm not trying to get into like all the arguments about how he did it or anything like that. I'm trying to get into the worldview of Genesis 1, where God created, Genesis 2, where God created human beings, and Genesis 3, where it all went wrong, okay? And what we see in Genesis chapter 3 is this worldview that many of us hold because we grew up in this nation, in which many of us hold because we are darkened the doors of a church and we've come in here today. And it's this idea, it's this worldview where whenever there was disobedience, whenever Adam and Eve disobeyed God, this sin was introduced, and God literally spoke to the snake, spoke to the serpent, spoke to Satan, and spoke to Adam and Eve, saying that as a result of this, there is a severance in the relationship that we have with God. And there's still a world that we live in that has beauty, that has meaning, that has everything in it, but this world also had sin introduced into it as well, which brought about hopelessness and despair. And so one of the things that God says right away to human beings is he says there will be, he said two things. There will be blessing and burden in the world, Genesis chapter 3. The effect of sin on the condition of life for human beings is that there will be blessings and there will be burdens. And he says, there will be pain in childbirth. Amen, women? All right, no? I've seen four kids get brought into this world. There's some pain in childbirth. He says that we will see this in work, that work will be hard, our toil, it will be burdensome. And you and I know, as we're going to talk about today, that whenever we go to work or whenever we go about the chores of our lives, there are things that we find meaning and purpose and satisfaction and fulfillment in, and there are other things that are like, that is a chore and that is a burden, and you might even say, I hate it, right? I mean, even for this, even for me, my church 180 gig, to be your pastor, there's a lot of my job I love, and there's a lot of my job that I'm like, this is dumb. I hate it. Right? And what we see from Genesis chapter 3 is we see a worldview that God has brought into humanity or spoken to us that says that life under the sun will be both a blessing and a burden. And as we get into Ecclesiastes chapter 3, I want you to hear this. We're going to read a passage, 10 verses to kick off. And this is a passage that you've probably heard if you've been to a funeral, okay? This is one of the most often quoted passages at funerals. And you will see what I'm talking about, a blessing and a burden. So Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 1 says this: there is a time for everything. You know what I'm talking about? You know where I'm going? You've been to a funeral? There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, or you could translate under the sun. A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Then he says this: what do workers gain from their toil, their work? I've seen the burden that God has laid on the human race. I've seen this burden. We're going to stop there for now. See, this passage seems to have all over it, written within it, the beauty and despair of life as a human being on planet Earth. See, and he gets to this idea of work that he opens up in chapter 2, or he starts to talk about in chapter 2. And so what we're going to talk about today is this idea of work. But chapter 2, verse 17, all the way through 3:22, he's talking about the beauty and the hopelessness, the beauty and the despair, but in that theme is this undercurrent of toil, okay, or work. And so he even says in chapter 2, verse 17, he says, so I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. And all of it's meaningless. Remember, we talked about this word meaningless. It's this idea of a breath. It's a puff. It's like smoke that comes up and dissipates and leaves. And he says, all of life, all of our work, all of this stuff is like a breath. And so as he starts to gain that perspective, he looks at the things that his hands find to do, and he says, much like I did in middle school and much like the middle schoolers in your life, what's the point, Mom? Right? What? I mean, Ruthie's already doing it. Like, what do I need to learn this math? Do you use this math? Right? That's where we're at. And I think so oftentimes, when we get real about life, we start to back ourselves into a corner, and we're fighting and we're slogging it out and we're working really hard, and we're like, man, why am I doing this? And we see that that is where Solomon is at in this passage. We see this, it's this verse where he's kind of a little bit unhinged, and we start to see the emotion coming out in him and in his writing as he's writing this with his perspective of life. And so here's what I want to do today. I want to talk about this idea of work, and I want to talk about this idea of toil as it threads through 2:17 through 3:22. Okay, and I want to talk about it from a more robust and broad perspective than you just going to your job. That is a huge part of it, but it is more encompassing, more robust than just you going off to work. So to do that, I want to give us a working definition for work before we get going. So I put it this way, and this is for me today, to communicate what we have to show with how we spend our days: work. Okay, it's us trying to have something to show for our lives through what we do with our days, right? Does that make sense? Like, so it's your job, but it's your commitments. I put it, it's your commitments, it's your employment, it's your studies, right? As kids, it's the housework that you have to do around the house. It's your retirement and the choose your own adventure that you're on, or whatever you do in the later years of your life. It's the extracurriculars that you sign up for, that you do. It's the commitments that we have. It's what we have to show with how we spend our days. And the reality is that when it comes to our places of employment, or when it comes to our studies, or it comes to even a lot of the commitments that we make, we start to either, because we're human beings created in the image of God in a fallen world, going back to the foundation of Genesis 3 account, we either start to idolize our work, our toil, our lives. We become obsessed with our calendars, our schedules, and the things that we commit to, and the places of employment that we have. We idolize them, or we demonize them, right? It's like one or the other. Like we start to idolize or demonize what we do, or you know, what we have to show with how we spend our lives. And that's how we kind of drift through what's happening. And so the big question that I want to answer through going through the scriptures today is this, is how do we find fulfillment? How do we find satisfaction? How do we find what we are looking for in our work? How do we find it? How do we find satisfaction in what we have to show with how we spend our days? Okay? So if we kind of go through, like, recap up to this point, in chapter 1, we learn that this word meaningless, okay, where he says, what do people gain from all their labors in which they toil under the sun? And I need you to understand once again the guy who's writing this. Because if anybody had anything to feel accomplished and to feel like good about what they did with their lives, it was him, right? He was given the responsibility to lead a nation, not just any nation, but to lead the nation who had a special relationship with God, right? No other nation could ever claim that from the history of our world. Like literally, God formed this nation from Abraham, one person, and said, you will be my people, and I will instruct you and teach you how to live and have a special relationship with you as a result of it. And he gets to lead them. Not only does he get to lead them, but his dad, okay, like saved up a lot of materials and saved up a lot of things to build a temple for God in this nation. And God said, David, you're not going to get to do it, but your son will get to build me a temple. So not only does he get to lead this nation that has a special relationship with God, but he gets to build this piece of architecture that the world had never seen before. He gets to build this temple for God through his people, in which they could relate to him better through this temple. So he gets to build the greatest project that the world's ever known up to this point. And as we talked about last week, he's built national parks and monuments and different things. Like, he's built vineyards and he's done all these different things. And we look at his accomplishments. We look at what he's done with the work that he has to do. And let me let you know, y'all, we ain't done nothing as significant as what he did. Right? I mean, we're going to get to it. You probably have done things more significant than what he did. But when it comes to under the heavens, when it comes to worldly, like, perspectives, when it comes to accomplishments that a human being could be, like, we are lit, like, we're 3,000 years later, we're still talking about the guy. You know? How many people, like, have lived in the last couple thousand years other than Jesus that you're like, oh yeah, we still know their story intimately and in depth, and we're talking about it frequently and regularly? Not that many. And so he's accomplished a lot, and he says, I hated my life because what is the point with all these great projects that he's done and all these things he's built? And so he was responsible for all that. He says, I hated my toil. He gets really emotional in that. And his desire for satisfaction and significance seems to always be escaping his grasp. I think about, I've shared this before, but I think about, you know, my 9-year-old, Jenny. And she, even last night, was just combing through YouTube videos with dances to certain songs that she's been in. And she was like, doing like some kind of dance in the living room, like, Mom, Dad, stop watching the Padres game. And it's like, it was a good game to stop watching too last night and pay attention. And She wants me to create her a YouTube channel so that she can get famous, right? And I think about that, and I think about like that Jim Carrey quote, right? Y'all know what I'm talking about? Where Jim Carrey, he said at one point, he said, I wish everybody could have the opportunity to get rich and famous so they could discover, just like me, that it's not the answer. Y'all ever heard that? And it's good. And I think about Solomon and his wealth, his fame, his ability to have whatever he wanted at any given moment, and it didn't fulfill him and it didn't satisfy him, and to the point where he said, I actually hated what I did. Because y'all, we live, like we talked about this last week, we live in a culture, a society of achievement and accomplishment. And it starts at a young age, and it drifts through up to our working life and our later years of life. And so what I want to do is I want to, for a minute, talk about what is it about work, all-encompassing, robust version of it. What is it about how we, what we have to show with how we spend our days? What is it about that that makes it so dang frustrating, right? What is it? And I think that it really comes back to two things, okay? When you think about this fallen world that we live in, this Genesis 3 world that we live in, it really comes down to two things that you and I get so frustrated in life, and why Solomon got so frustrated in life about this. You ready for them? Here they are. Number one, when it takes more from us than we intended to give it, right? When your job takes more from you than you intended to give it, it sucks. When your commitments take more from you than you had planned to give them, you're not happy, right? When anything in life, whenever you intended to give X amount to something, and all of a sudden it starts to creep in and take more from you than you intended to give it, it gets burdensome and frustrating. See, I wrote it this way. No one sets out to say, hey, I hope work takes over my life. Nobody says that, right? But for many people, that's just the reality. Is work starts to just one commitment after the other, and it starts to creep in and take over. Slowly over time, it creeps into our lives, and what we intended isn't actually what we start giving it. See, I hesitate to share this example, but I will, because I'm me, and I overshare. my mode of transportation is on its last leg. Okay? It just is. It's not great. I've already put a new engine in it. The new engine doesn't sound great. My old Jeep Cherokee. And so Kelsey and I are slowly entering into the market of vehicles and trying to figure this out. We just are. And so I won't tell you about all of our search, but I've done a lot of digging over the last few weeks and phone calls to friends who, you know, because I believe in Financial Peace University. I believe in Dave Ramsey. I believe in some of the financial principles that we talk about here at Church 180. And I believe that one of the reasons that so many people get sideways with their finances and so many people get sideways in life in general is because of cars in a lot of ways. And so I know there's all kinds of principles around purchasing cars, and we're going to offer Financial Peace University, and some of y'all need to take it in January coming up and stuff. But in looking for cars, man, those salespeople, those websites, those dealerships, they are so sneaky. They're crafty, right? It's like, okay, like I will, just full disclosure, this week I was on the Tesla website, okay? And I'm looking at like the Tesla website and everything that's going on here and their calculations, right? Because they do all the calculations that are there and all the calculations that they can have to give. And they're like, you know, your estimated savings of gas is da 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 da. And they take your estimated savings of gas and deduct it from the price that they show for the monthly payment. That should be criminal. Don't tell me how much I may save at the pump. Tell me how much I'm paying, right? Okay, here's the point that I'm trying to make. When it comes to car dealerships, when it comes to all this stuff that we're talking about, the point that I'm trying to make is this, is that so often, so much of the world will display a front to you and say, this is what it is. But then when you make that commitment and you get wrangled in, all of a sudden you start to see the true cost, right? And you start to see that, oh, it isn't what it was over here. It actually resides over here. And all of a sudden, it asks more of you than you ever intended to give it. You see what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, that's my phone bill right now. We signed up for AT&T. We'd been, sans, contract for a while. And we signed up for a phone bill, a couple years ago. And I remember, when it first, and it's I didn't sign up for this. You didn't tell me about all the hidden fees, right? It's the same thing. And I think that our commitments, our work, so much of our life, okay, creeps in. And it starts to ask more of us than we ever intended to give it. And then in that moment, it becomes burdensome, right? And it becomes toil. It becomes labor because we did not expect to have to give that much to it. See, going back to the car thing, you don't see the total cost with work, but you're just making installments over a period of time. And over a period of time, the installments add up and add frustration to our lives. Number two is this. When it takes more from us than we intended to give it. And number two, the thing that makes work so frustrating is when it gives us less than we hoped it would give us, right? I think that's one of the things that Solomon is hinting at here. What is the point? When it gives us less. See, sometimes whenever we go off to work or whenever we sign up for something and we, with the car or with some kind of commitment or whatever in life, but we say yes and we sign up and we go to work and we do the whole thing, we count on a lot of things to happen as a result of that, right? When we go off to work, we count on being able to pay our bills, right? To buy food for our families. I gotta buy a never-ending stream of fruit and fruit snacks and pretzels and crap that goes in my pantry for my kids who never stop eating snacks. Right? They just don't. And so much of when we commit and when we go off to have something to show for how we spend our lives, it takes more than we wanted to give it, but then it also doesn't give back as much as we hoped that it would give. Because I think a lot of times what we are doing in life is we are looking for hopes. We're looking to have dreams fulfilled. We're hoping to fit an image, right? We see an image in an email for an advertisement, and we're like, oh, we want our life to look that way. We want to commit to things. We want to do things that will give us significance, that will give us a sense of security or security. That we want things that will fulfill the deep longings of our hearts. And newsflash, the thing that Solomon's going to get to time after time after time in this whole letter is that what we will do is we will look to work, we will look to what we have to show with how we spend our days, we will look to this with our God-sized longings. And we will wonder why it doesn't fulfill us and it doesn't satisfy us, because it cannot provide what only God was intended to provide. Our work can't give that to us. Our commitments can't give that to us. Our kids can't give that to us. Our spouse can't give that to us. Our friends can't give that to us. What Solomon is coming back to is what you have to show with how you spend your life. Whenever you expect more out of it than it has to give, you will be frustrated. You will see life as a burden, and you will see life as a drain instead of the blessings, as we're going to talk about in a minute. But I wanted to say it this way. It should be a slide. Your life under the sun, remember, under the sun is with a worldly perspective, with a horizontal perspective, with a what's in it for me around the world perspective. Your life under the sun cannot give you what only God provides. See, the more you chase after that desire and project it onto your work, your school, or your commitments, the more you will find that you chase harder and harder with greater frustration and greater despair, hoping that it will give you what it was never designed to give you. See, I mean, I think that's the thing. Like, I'm trying to go into like this car thing with eyes wide open, because we all know the new wears off in like a month, right? Y'all, you've been there, right? You buy something new, like, I don't know, new pair of shoes or whatever, and you're so excited about it that first day, and then all of a sudden you're like, it's just my shoes. Like a month from now, or a week from now, or day two, right? But go back to that example. I think so oftentimes we get a new job, or we approach life through a certain way, and we, you know, we're like gonna sign up for this thing or this commitment or buy this thing or work this job or whatever, or get this promotion, and we're so excited. But then it starts giving less than we expected it to give, and taking more from us than we ever expected to give it. Like the car payment, and it gets frustrating. And see, if this is the drain, and this is why work is so frustrating, I want to talk for a second about what has the potential to make it fulfilling, okay? And what do we see from these passages? What do we see from the life of Solomon? What do we see from the journal entry, Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and 3? What do we see that makes life, our work, what we have to show with how we spend our days more fulfilling? Number one is this: when it stays within our limits. I hate to break it to you, and maybe this is more for me than for anybody else, because my wife has to remind me this every single week. Tony, you can't do it all. She does. Like she'll go away like a few times while we've lived here. She's gone back to Illinois to spend time with family, and I've been back out here by myself. And without her guidance in my life, I will run myself ragged to the point of getting sick. I will commit to more things, go to more parties, do more for work, do more for action and adventure with hobbies. I will inevitably work my way into sickness without her guidance. That's just who I am and how God wired me in so many ways. And it's great to have her guiding hand. But I think that one of the things that makes work, one of the things that makes life more fulfilling, and I find more fulfillment when my wife is around, is she helps me keep my life within my limits, right? In so many ways. It addresses the first issue. When it stays with our limits, it can be fulfilling. Because here's the thing, like we talked about, it, like life will always take more than we have to give, either from our own compulsion, like me, or the people around us. Like work, our life will take as much from us as we allow it to take. And you have to be a person who predecides that you are not going to expect more from what you have to show with how you spend your days. You're not going to expect more than it will take, than you have to give. So it stays within your limits. I mean, you have, when life takes from you, you have to decide healthy limits so you know when you're going to get rest, when you're going to delight in God, when you're going to invest in significant friendships, when you're going to invest into your church family, when you're going to invest into your biological, your God-given family. You have to know that, because if you don't put parameters around it, if you don't live life within your limits, it will sprawl all over the place, and you'll wonder why it's so burdensome and you're so frustrated. You know what I mean? And so you can't expect that work is going to give you more than it can. Number two is this, is whenever it is seen as a gift from God. Your life is a gift from God. And work will become fulfilling when it is seen as a gift from God. I love this. Solomon carries on. In verse 9, he says, "What do workers gain from their toil? I've seen the burden that God has laid on the human race." And then he says this, okay? This is the passage of the book. Become a person who memorizes scripture and memorize Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11. Okay, this is the hinge point of everything that Solomon writes in everything. He has made everything beautiful in its time, God. He's also set eternity in the human heart, yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. He wrote, I know that there's nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil, because this is a gift of God. And it's this idea that, you know, a couple things that are going on here. We talked about all these different things in life last week that we try to find happiness in, right? We talked about like different forms of pleasure that we try to find happiness in last week. And we talked about how each and every single one of those have measures of happiness when we see them as a gift from God, but not as God in and of himself. That whenever we look to these things as God, we will inevitably find ourselves chasing them to destruction and be unhappy in the end. But then Solomon also is talking here is not only these things that we were talking about last week, but this idea of work, this idea of what we have to show with how we spend our life, how we spend our days. This is a gift from God. And one of the ways that we will be happy, one of the ways that we will find fulfillment, one of the ways that we will find satisfaction in that is not in letting it take more from us than we ever intended it to give and expecting more out of it than it's ever going to give us, but to put some limits on it, to understand that it's not going to be God in our lives, and understand that while it's not God, it still is a gift from God. Okay? But I think the other thing, too, is when it's within our limits, it's seen as a gift from God. But then I think the third thing to find fulfillment in all of life, and this is, I think, the culminating part of what he says in chapter 3, verse 11, is whenever we give it the right perspective, right? When it serves a greater purpose, that we will actually find fulfillment, we will find happiness when we see it as a gift from God and when it serves a greater purpose in life. See, I wanted to put it this way. There's a direct correlation between our happiness, our fulfillment, and our contentment and our gratitude. Like in the last 10 years, like, right, we've had so many authors, so many different researchers, social science people come out and tell us that, hey, turns out when you're grateful for things, you get happier. And all of this is so backed in ancient scriptures, right? Where Solomon's saying, hey, like, grab a big eternal perspective. Understand that what you have to show with how you spend your days has a greater purpose. And that it doesn't just fit into the here and now and all this stuff, but it serves a greater purpose. And when you see it that way, you will have gratitude for what you have. And when you have gratitude for what you have, you will be content, you will be fulfilled, and you'll be satisfied as a result of that shift in perspective of seeing things through an eternal lens, an eternal perspective with a greater purpose that's there. And see, I love this quote, and it's going to come up, it's meaty, okay? And it's by C.S. Lewis, and he wrote it in the book Mere Christianity. He said this, he says, if I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. And see, what he's saying there is a modern 1960s, okay? So not that modern. But at least it's not 3,000 years ago. He's giving us a modern interpretation of Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11. It says, God set eternity in our hearts, yet we cannot fathom what he has done from beginning to end. And C.S. Lewis just says, hey, if you find in yourself desires that nothing can satisfy, not the, as we talked about, not the achievements, not the pleasure, not the sex, not the, you know, the food and drink, not the, you know, not, if we find in ourselves, not the work, not all these things, if we find in ourselves desires with which we go searching and looking and exploring and nothing in this world can satisfy, he says, the only plausible explanation is that you were created not just for the here and now, but you were created for eternity. And that's what he's saying. And so I think for you and I, if we're looking for contentment, we're looking for fulfillment, we're looking for satisfaction, we got to realize that so much of what we search for it ain't there. It's in taking a long view and a greater perspective and a view that says, man, like, there's a greater purpose. See, I wanted to follow this up real quick as we kind of close. not to leave you hopeless, like in the past, okay? The past 2 weeks, right? So much of this letter is dark. But Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and he writes about this greater purpose, okay? And so Solomon's, you know, kind of seen from one perspective, and he's trying to take it with an eternal perspective in mind. But the Apostle Paul writes right back to the church in Corinth, and he says this. He says in chapter 15, verse 58, he says, "Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you, and always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." You know it's not in vain. And my argument for you this morning, and my argument for me this morning, is that there is purpose, there is meaning to our lives, but in order to obtain that, in order to not expect more out of our lives than it has to give, but in order to see it and find fulfillment in it, we have to see it through the lens of eternity and through the lens of the Lord. And then and only then will we find the meaning and the satisfaction and the fulfillment that we are looking for. So we're going to move into a time of communion right now, and we just do this week in and week out at Church 180, and it's where we remember the meaning that Jesus gave us, that Solomon was pointing towards, and that, you know, the Apostle Paul was pointing back towards, and here we are 2,000 years later pointing back towards.